Welcome to Da Vinci's Discourse, where the minds of today's most innovative entrepreneurs are unveiled and explored. And my name is Kyle Campbell, your guide on this journey into the depths of the entrepreneurial psyche. So sit back, relax, and get ready to dive into the minds of the greats. This is Da Vinci's Discourse.
I want you to answer this question. If somebody were to ask you at a bar, coffee shop, whatever, who you are, how would you answer it?
I'd probably start with, I'm a husband, father, business owner, Christ follower. I mean, those are kind of like the key components. I'm a personal finance guru, right? So it's like, I help people when it comes to money, figure out like their situation, make complex things simple. That's probably where I would start.
Interesting. I like how you split the two up. So it's not what you do, but it's who you are. And then you got into what you do. I like it, man. I like it. Let's get into the finance side of things. Where do you usually start? Let's say that you were teaching me to be you for a day. How would you go about telling me to be able to understand my finances, be able to have less issues moving forward in the future, you know, mistakes that you would have not had to make if you knew them earlier, that kind of thing. Where does your mind go?
Yeah, I would say awareness. I think a lot of us just kind of go through the motions, right? Of like, hey, I got to go to work. I got to pick up the kids, or I got to, you know, I have these commitments that I have to do without kind of like slowing down and saying, no, like, what do I really need to do? And why do I need to do it? And then what is the cost to make those things happen? It's funny. I just realized that we had this subscription that we were paying to Amazon for PBS Kids that I was like, our kids are so old, not old, but they're old enough to where they don't watch that stuff anymore. And we probably paid it for like 2 years. Huh. And it was like this awareness thing of like, Oh, I don't need that. It's an expense that I don't need to incur anymore, so I can get rid of it. So I think for a lot of people, it's just saying, hey, let me sit down and say, what are my values? Like, what are things that are important to me? And then now, what am I actually doing? And then how do I align my values with my spending?
Okay. So where do we start with that? We start with the values. So how do you go about identifying your financial values as opposed to values in other areas of your life? And do you make the dichotomy? Is there a difference to you? Where do you start?
Yeah, I would say that really it would be more like, it depends if you're like single or married, right? I'd say if you're married, what are some things that are important to us, right? For us, it's we want to put our kids through college and we don't want them to have to get student loans. We want to be able to have freedom. And that means that we paid off our debt completely. We have no debt, including our house. So it's like, what are things important to you? Do you want to retire early? Do you want to be able to travel on a regular basis? Do you want to, you know, create a lifestyle for your kids that you didn't get when you grew up? It's really just kind of figuring out what are those core values that you have. And then it's just a mathematical equation. It's like, well, how much money do I need to retire at this stage? How much money do I need to put my kids through college? How much money do I need to be able to travel twice per year to cool places? And so that's kind of the initial steps to make that kind of analysis.
Right. See, the thing that's difficult about this is for entrepreneurs, especially, the numbers is different from the creativity and will be overly balanced or overly focused on this side of things, the creativity side, creating, as opposed to the more analytical side that I feel like you specialize in, which is the numbers, the analysis of, like you said, even analyzing credit card statements, something as simple as that, something that a lot of us like to postpone or not bother looking at because we're busy looking at other stuff or focusing elsewhere. And so it's a tricky balance you got to find, right? How do you personally balance it? Because you're an entrepreneur. So how do you balance those two together in a way that is optimized and works for you?
Yes. So I think that it's kind of continually, we're forgetful people, I would say, in general, right? Mm-hmm. Like we set these dreams, we set these values, and then like life gets busy, things happen, and we kind of, you know, we might let it go by the wayside, or we might lose track of what. I think the continual check-ins, right? So like monthly check-ins. On my business, I do mid-month check-ins. So like, okay, on the 15th of the month, how are we doing compared to the previous month? Because otherwise, what will happen, we'll get to the end of the month and be like, why is my revenue low? Why is my ad spend high? Like, what, what's going on here, right? It's so it's being continually aware and making those kind of continual check-ins to make sure that you're on track for whatever those goals and values that you signed. And it's great to be creative. Like, I love dreaming and being creative, but it's also very valuable to actually have a plan to execute on that creativity effectively.
So you start with the plan and then you move into the numbers behind the plan. It involves a lot of tracking at the end of the day. And again, tracking is difficult as hell, man. It's easier to just to do something, see what happens and adjust, as opposed to really analyzing the numbers. And so let's say you're running an ad campaign. Where do you go in terms of thinking about how to make sure you don't spend too much money, make sure that it's profitable? You said a bi-weekly checkup. So what's your process for that? You go through the numbers and obviously make sure you're profitable, but what do you look for specifically? What's the specific criterion that you're looking for?
Yeah, so I want to touch on something that you said. I think tracking can be difficult, right? I mean, it's like if you're using Excel spreadsheets, I think finding the right softwares can really help. So we have one that literally tells us how much money this page made over a period of time. And then I know on from my ad side, how much I spent for that page, right? So instead of me being able to like guess or figure out, like, you know, go into each different network and figure out where it's coming from, it's all right there for me. So I basically log into two different places. I think finding the right tools to help you track so that it's not overwhelming, because especially if you're a creative person, you're not going to want to like spend time tracking stuff, right? It's going to feel like nails on a chalkboard. And so I think really finding the right tools and then spending the time to set it up and then just setting those reminders. On the 15th, I have a reminder. And then on the first of the next month, I have a reminder that says, hey, okay, here's where we were halfway. Here's where we are for the entire month. Are we on track? Do we need to adjust?
Interesting. What are some of the tools that you use then?
So the main tool that I use right now is called Affilimate. I used to use a tool called ClickMeter, but it went out of business. So Affilimate is the one that works the best for me right now.
What does that do?
So it tracks different affiliate networks. Okay. So for our business as a personal finance site, we have all these partnerships with banks, with insurance. And so it basically pulls in data from all these different partnerships into one place and tells us where they converted. So it makes it super easy to kind of stay on track and figure out what pages are working, which ones are not. And so we can make adjustments.
Interesting. Okay. So let's look at it from a consulting point of view. Where do you think the best course of a route that we can take to be able to provide the most value to an entrepreneur watching or listening? Where can you provide the most value to somebody who's got an entrepreneurial bent and hates tracking things, hates the number side of things, but is finding it necessary in terms of making things profitable and being able to track it? And so where does your mind go in terms of the optimized path that you and I can take today?
Yeah, what I would say is, like, once you have that awareness piece, right, of like, okay, here are my values, here's what I want to accomplish, and here's why I want to accomplish it. I think that's kind of like the core part. Once you have that, tracking is just one part of that equation that says, hey, in order for me to have this dream, I need to do these things. And some of those things are uncomfortable or maybe a little bit, testing your limits. I would say one of the things I found is finding subcontractors that are really specialized in a certain tool or a certain, you know, if you look for a Google ad specialist or a Pinterest ad specialist, or you look for people that are good at what you're not. I think that's been a huge win for me because I'm not a technical guy. Like, I might be a personal finance guy, but I like things simple. I do not like complexity. So if something's too complex for me, I try to find someone that's better at it than I am and hire them to do that part of the equation so that I don't have to.
Right. So let's walk through that process. You start with the values. You're able to find the vision that you can formulate based on the values. And then there's the obvious numbers that go into that. And then you're saying, once you've got the vision, the picture of what you want to be doing, the why behind it, which I think is important, then you move into the hiring of somebody to be able to take care of the number side. It's complement your yin to their yang kind of a thing. And so there's something to be said about that for sure. I use Upwork, man. Upwork is great for that. What do you use in terms of finding people to do it for you?
Yeah, so Upwork primarily for like technical stuff. For the people that work in my business like on a regular basis, I found from like friends of friends, right? So really like people that I that can vouch for them. The challenge with Upwork, which Upwork is great, they have a 5-star rating system, right? So you can find people and vet them. But it's more of like a project base, at least I found, versus like I have people that have worked for me for 8 years or worked with me, I shouldn't say for me, subcontractors. But I found them through networks of people in the personal finance community and from friends of friends. And so those people that stick with me the longest are like word of mouth referrals. But yeah, Upwork is the place that I look for like more specific project based, you know, I need someone that's really good at this, but I only need them for a short period of time.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. I do both, man. I like the long-term employees that I can find there as well. I start off with the contracts, see how they do. And sometimes you get lucky and you find a killer and then you get them on board as soon as you can. And I've gotten lucky like that a couple of times, which is freaking sweet. What are some of the ways that you utilize somebody else's, let's say, because you don't like the tech stuff, right? So what are the specific ways that, or even roles that you hire out, and what do they do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, so fortunately, there's not a lot of day-to-day stuff, right? As far as tech stuff, we have one company that we work with that manages kind of our back-end side of things. And so they have alerts set up. So like today, I accidentally pointed our site. I changed an A record I shouldn't have to another site. And yeah. I'm like, and we fixed it pretty quick. You know, so it's like sometimes being an entrepreneur, you're like, hey, I just want to get this done, but then you mess stuff up. So they're kind of like a checks and balances. He emails me, he's like, hey, did you just point your site to another site? I'm like, yes, I did. Let's undo that, you know? And so I think having someone like that in the back end to make sure everything's running smoothly is good. It's funny that literally just happened today. But yeah, so I think, so for that, it's kind of like they're there, they're aware of what's going on. If I have, for instance, I had a schema question. I'm like, hey, could you add this schema to this page? Like, I'm not a schema expert. They're like, yeah, we could do that. So it's just having those people that you have access to and you have kind of an arrangement with that make it kind of simple to, you don't feel overwhelmed. Like, how am I going to get this done? You're like, no, I got somebody. I just email them. They take care of it.
Yeah, it's handy, dude. What do you mean by schema in the website context? I'm not familiar with that term in this way.
So schema is just a markup language on the back side of your website. So like what we see is the front end, right? But on the back end, you know, there's different search engines, Bing, Google, Yahoo, that basically crawl our websites. Schema is just a way to tell those crawlers more information. So this person is also this person on LinkedIn, is also this person on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, or X. And so now Google can start to link everything together and say, oh, this person also writes for these other major finance sites. They're also this person on LinkedIn, builds credibility, connects kind of all the dots.
I wonder how that ties in with the psychological aspect of schemas. I mean, when I hear the word schema, I think of it as a sort of pair of glasses or lens that you see the world through that was installed or learned in childhood. And you're able to change glasses by changing the perception of the schema, or I guess metaphorically taking the glasses off, putting a new pair on, you know, rosy pink John Lennon glasses, as opposed to like aviators, like the Terminator or whatever. You know, you can change the way that you perceive the world based on changing the schemas, and really starts with observing the schemas, but totally different. I went off board there, but it's fascinating that they use the same term. I can't figure out the correlation between the two of them, but let's take it this route. What would you recommend that an average entrepreneur doesn't have the financial expertise that you obviously do? What would you recommend that we hire out in terms of getting our numbers down pat and not having the issues in the future?
Well, that's it. There's two things that I even hire out for, which are bookkeeping. Bookkeeping was like the bane of my existence. You know, you think, you hear personal finance guy, it's like, yes, but bookkeeping is literally, you're in a software and you're categorizing things. I'm like, that is not fun to me. So bookkeeping, make sure that everything is accounted for. And, you know, I get a report once a month that says, hey, here's your P&L. And I could say, oh, what is this expense? Or, oh, this is miscategorized. So bookkeeping, hiring out for that is huge. Accounting is another one. We have multiple LLCs. So it's kind of like being able to keep track of everything, you know, filing as an S corp, having K-1s, all that kind of stuff. So having a good bookkeeper, a good accountant, you know, there are financial planners, but the beauty of personal finance today is like, we're in a very different world today than 20 years ago. Like 20 years ago, like most people would hire a financial planner, advisor, have them manage their funds. Nowadays, you can buy index funds and set it and forget it. and you have, you know, the Dow Jones, the S&P 500, you know, there's all, you know, bond funds. Like, so you can make a portfolio pretty quickly and be well diversified and not have to have somebody that you're paying like an annual fee to. So I'd say they are valuable, but usually for more complex entrepreneurship cases. I mean, if people have like, they're trying this to somebody else, you're probably going to want to hire a financial planner. But if you have a very simple situation, you know, I think as an entrepreneur, bookkeeper, accountant is kind of the best, you know, financial people to have on your team.
Oh, interesting. I mean, fair enough, right? What's your exact specialty? So what do you typically help people with specifically?
So I'm more like I said, I like to make complex things simple. So a lot of people, they come overwhelmed. They're like, I've got all this debt. Okay, well, how much debt? Okay, I've got $80,000 in debt. Okay, what does that debt consist of? Well, it consists of $30,000 in student loans, $20,000 in car loans, and the remainder is credit cards. Okay, well, I could already tell you that like credit cards are your high interest debt that we want to get rid of as soon as possible. Here's the way that I would pay them off in the shortest period of time and all the rest of your debt so that you can put yourself in a better financial position.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the podcast, and I want to let you know that I've got a free book that you can get if you want to tap into more of these resources, and you can get that for free at kylesbook.com. Back to the podcast.
Well, how do I come up with the extra? You can increase your income, you can decrease your expenses. Here's how you do that, right? Like making it super like formulaic, simple, breaking it down for people. I even do that. I have a guy that's a piano teacher, and I've helped him with his piano business because he's got so many students. He's got other teachers that teach underneath him. And he's like, how do I make sure that this is profitable? How do I make sure that I'm, you know, I'm saving money to be able to grow my business and things like that. So that's really where I specialize is kind of more like the budgeting aspect and kind of making all the pieces come together.
Mm. All right. So let's say I've got credit card debt, or let's say that, you know, because a lot of people have different structures or different types of debt. I'm lucky enough not to, except for my mortgage that I'm getting right now, which is a whole nother freaking story. I'm going through a pain in the ass with the underwriting process of that. But debt for a typical person, let's say it's student loans, and then you've got a credit card, let's say a line of credit, whatever it may be. You start obviously with the highest amount of interest. You pay that down. How do you recommend specifically going about that? Let's say you've got, because the way I look at it, if I got a line of credit and I got a credit card, I'll obviously pay the credit card with the line of credit because it's a lower interest rate. But how do you look at paying down debt? And then how does that relate to an entrepreneur using their profits from their business?
Yeah. So what I would say is I do like paying off high interest debt. What I like the largest, regardless of the interest rate. And the reason why that's effective
is because you cut out. I didn't catch that. It just blanked out for like 10 seconds. Can you repeat that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the method that we use and that I advocate is called the debt snowball method. This is where you pay off your debts smallest to largest, regardless of the interest rate, which means like if I've got a $200 bill with a lower interest rate and I have a $400 bill with a higher interest rate, I'm actually going to pay off the $200 one first. And the reason being is we're psychological beings, right? And so we're emotional. And so if it takes us forever to do something, we get demotivated, we feel defeated. We're like, why am I even doing this? So the beauty of paying off the smallest debt first is like, okay, I've got an extra $200 this month. I literally can pay off one credit card and move on to the next. And now the $200 I just paid on that, I can put towards the next, pay that one off in 2 months because it was $400, right? And so it's really creating an action plan. Now there are people that are like, okay, like you said, the mathematics make more sense to pay off the highest interest rate first. So there's another method called the debt avalanche. And that's where you literally just list your debts by highest interest rate to lowest interest rate and tackle that. I will say though, unless you are numbers oriented, unless you are like an accountant or a bookkeeper, like it's probably not going to be the best method because typically speaking, it's going to take longer. It's not going to feel as motivating. You're not going to feel like you're getting the wins quickly. And so really it's just kind of what's your temperament and choose the path that makes the most sense for you.
Yeah, fair enough. I like that point. We're psychological beings. It sucks to have to pay more interest than we have to. So I'm wondering if there's a better way to go about it, maybe a gamification where, for example, if you're even just checking off a to-do list, you get a little dopamine spike. It feels good to check something off, right? You're like, oh yeah, I accomplished something. The same way you're talking about paying off the $200 bill. I wonder if there's a way to I guess, artificially structure it so that you're paying the highest interest rate first while still getting that feeling of accomplishment throughout it. Because I mean, like, it's not logical, it's emotionally sound, but not logically sound when it comes to paying off the $200 one if it's got a lower interest rate than a $400 one or whatever. So I mean, it's tricky, man. I wonder if there are tools to be able to take that logic and apply it to the emotional side of it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, we did something very similar with the debt snowball and with tracking our debt. So I have a debt snowball form that basically anybody can download for free, but they can list their debt smallest to largest and put the interest rate in there, and it will tell you how many months until you're debt free. So you could effectively do the same thing. You could put the highest interest rates in first, and it will tell you how many months you're debt free. So I guess in that sense, maybe if you got out of debt in 16 months instead of 17 months because you paid off the highest interest rate first, you're like, oh, I'm seeing that number change from 16 months to 15 months. The other thing that I did is I have a debt tracker that I put on our fridge. And so we started at $52,000 in debt, and then we paid off like $1,000. So they went from 52 to 51, and then 51 to 50. Then we got like a tax return and went from 50 to like 47, you know? And so, so things like that, like you said, gamification is huge because we're seeing that every day when I go to the fridge to open it up. Wow, we're making progress. This is working. Let's keep going.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. What are some gold nuggets that you can give us beyond the obvious that if we were to only know this one thing, it would save us a bunch of pain in the ass in the future? I like the one you put it on the fridge. It reminds you, as opposed to artificially telling yourself I'm successful, even if you're crazy in debt and you got no business, no income, and you're telling yourself, like, sure, there's something to that with programming the unconscious, but I like to remind myself, if I'm in a bad situation, I'm fucked right now. I got to figure out how to get the hell out of this situation. Otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble. And so that motivates me. And that's kind of what the fridge does for you. And it also has the tracking side of it. Where my mind goes with that is I'd like to see the numbers go up. So maybe I'd start with zero, have it slash 50K if I'm in 50K in debt. And then I'm stacking the numbers up. So it feels like I'm leveling up as opposed to having to do the math. Just got a minor psychological edge there. So it feels like you're progressing. So what are some tricks that we can do, man? What are some things that are good to know?
Yeah, I love that. So what I would say is tracking your net worth is another way to do it, to where what you're talking about it looks like you're going up instead of down, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, I use an app called Empower. It's free. It's like mint.com, if you're familiar with that went away recently. But basically, I can log in and in real time, it will pull in all of my information from all my different financial institutions, Bank of America, Chase, whatever, and all in one place. And it will show me my net worth. And you can see a chart that actually shows over time it going up, right? And so to your point, like when we were paying off our debt, we were using Excel spreadsheet. Now there are apps so you can do it for free and you can see that progress and you could be in a line at the grocery store and you could check it. You know, you could be at the doctor's office waiting and check it. So if you're that type of person that likes to get those affirmations, hey, I'm going in the right direction, you don't need to be in front of your fridge anymore. You can actually just use an app and do it in real time.
And it could remind you of both ways, if you're going up or going down. So you got motivation either way, which is something worthwhile. And especially because you're putting yourself in the subconscious mindset of wealth, either if it's bad or good or perceived bad as good, there is the mindset of okay, so I'm progressing, or at least I'm considering my financial situation, regardless of it. What are some tricks that we can do, man? Something you've learned along the way that you thought afterwards, man, if only I knew that a long time ago, that would have helped me out. What's something you find is helpful?
Well, I think where I'm probably going to go with this is maybe a little bit different, but is if I have cash to pay for something, I can afford it. I think the mentality that I grew up in my household was if I wanted something, I had access to capital. And if I had access to capital, I could afford it. So therefore I went out and I bought a car and I got a loan. I went to college, I got a loan. I used a credit card, I borrowed money, right? The challenge with that mindset is you will always be in debt. Or at least I was, right? That cycle always continues because my mindset is, oh, I have access to capital. I'm just going to go borrow the money. When I switch from that mindset to if I have cash, I can afford it. Well, now it's like, okay, we want to go on a vacation to Nashville. Well, how much is it going to cost to rent an Airbnb? How much How much will it cost for 4 flights to get to Nashville? How much will it cost for food and for gas and rental car while we're there, right? Now it's like, okay, that's going to be like $2,000 or $3,000. Now, I could put on a credit card, but I'm going to pay 20% interest. So instead of doing that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to save a certain amount of money per month to have the money to pay cash for it when we go. And then I can say, hey, I can afford this trip. So I think that's one thing that I think if people can have that mindset shift, it can be game changing. Because instead of you being kind of a slave to debt and feeling like, hey, I'm constantly trying to dig out of a hole, you're like, no, I have the cash in the bank to go on this trip. I have the cash to be able to do these cool, amazing things, to buy this new car. The only thing that house, most people aren't going to save up $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 cash to buy a house. In those situations, it's like, yeah, well, how can I get my credit score to the best place possible so that I get the best interest rate so that I'm paying the least amount of interest? In that scenario, that makes sense. For business owners, there might be some things where, you know, we do ad spend on credit cards, but I have the cash to pay it off when the bill comes, right? So it's just making sure that you have the cash to pay for the items that you're looking to purchase.
Yeah, fair enough. I like it. I mean, I like buying everything on a credit card and I just pay the bill at the end of the month so that I get the points and I don't pay any interest. Within 21 days, I pay it off. Good to go, baby. That's what I like to do. But I can see if you're struggling with debt, and especially if you're tempted to leverage the debt when you, it's probably not responsible to do so. That's another question. I mean, how do you know when it's responsible to leverage debt to invest in something or to purchase something?
Yeah, I would say the probability that the plan is actually going to happen, right? It's like, if you're like, hey, I want to start this business and I want to serve, you know, Eskimos popsicles. You're like, well, the likeliness of Eskimos wanting to buy popsicles, probably pretty low. Maybe
depends on your sales skills, baby. Depends on how well you can communicate the value of them.
But
you're the only one in the village to have it, man. Imagine the feeling you're gonna have when all the hot milfs in the business or in the village are gonna be like, oh wow, he's got popsicles. We've only got white snow. I mean, there's all
kinds of ways. I think probabilities, right? So in my mind, it's like, to your point, we use credit cards, but I have the cash in a business account or I have the cash in an emergency fund that if the end of the month comes, I have 100% cash to pay for it. I think the challenge is a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. I think the number was like 59% of people don't have $1,000.
Freaking nice. Right? Yeah.
And so the problem is if you have a $3,000 credit card bill and you only have $1,000 in the bank, you're going to pay interest on that $2,000 difference, right? So it's really, that's the mindset shift that I'm going for, is the making sure that I have that cash to pay for it. It's not that it's bad. It's that it can be dangerous and it's going to cost you a lot more money down the road. So that's really what I think is dangerous. I think most people, you know, if you have 59% of people don't have that kind of savings, it's kind of like, okay, well, then you should put credit cards only on things like your Netflix or recurring payments that are fixed, right? So you're not going to overspend and pay that interest rate.
What do you say to the person who doesn't have the money to start off with? What if, you know, they got no option, they're in a tough spot, it happens, man. What do you say to that person in terms of managing their spend, not going too deep into the hole any more than necessary?
Yeah, what I would say is I would build up a nest egg. Like, I think it's a fallacy to say that I'm starting off from nothing. Like, I think you could, and you could buy stuff and flip it on Craigslist and make $500. Like, so I think in my mind, there's like YouTube videos of YouTubers, these young guys. And they're like, they're out at the beach slinging water bottles, right? For $2. Right. I think there are things that you can do that provide value that will bring in an influx of cash to be able to test things that might be a little bit risky. Are they glamorous? No, but I think I would much rather do that than borrow money at 20% interest, right? So it's like, there's this girl called, I think it's the Furniture Doctor on Instagram. She literally gets furniture off of, you know, Craigslist, fixes it up. And I think she makes like $100,000 a year fixing up furniture, and she loves it, right? And she makes more money from her Instagram videos than she does from making the furniture. She just loves fixing the furniture up, making it look good. So I think there's just this fallacy of like, I don't have anything. It's like, you can have something. You just got to figure out the route to go get the money to be able to do what you want to do. And so I think if we can help people see that and realize that in themselves, then the conversation shifts. It's like, I love the idea of thinking of like, how else can I pay for something? Debt is only one way.
Yeah, like
another way is selling water bottles. Another way is going to yard sales and arbitrage. Another way is, you know, driving people around for Uber, right? There's plenty of ways that you can come up with cash to be able to execute on your idea. You just got to figure out what works for you.
Yeah, dude, that's what I did at 17. I have a stock. I had moved out. I needed to pay rent. I needed to get some food for the first time in my life that I had to pay for myself. And all I had was an iPhone. It was an iPhone 4. So that gives you the kind of date. It was probably 2012, something like that. And so one day I was needing food. I dropped my iPhone on a tile floor. It cracked. And I said, shit. So I went on Craigslist, posted it up for $180, sold it that same day for $180. And then I bought another one the same exact day, actually the same trip. Went to go sell one for 180, went to go buy another one for 140. And I was like, shit, man, I just made $40. And I did it again and again. And before the end of the next year or two, I was making like, I think $6,000 in a week was my best week with it. Just buying and selling iPhones. And yeah, dude, I've been in tough freaking spots where one of the times I was in a community where it was a Jewish community, and they would always not throw, but put furniture on the side of the road to help people. And I was like, shit, I'm dead broke. So I'd go out and pick up like a big fucking chair or something and post it on Craigslist and be able to pay rent just from the furniture that people were putting on the side of the road. And you're providing a service and you're making the neighborhood look good, you know? So that's, if you're in a tough spot, I like that. Get creative. The question to ask is, how can I earn the money that I need instead of I'm broke, right? You can don't stop there. Yeah, ask the next question, which is how do I hook myself up and get out of this situation? And yeah, I mean, what about you? Have you ever been in a tough spot where you had to do something creative like that?
Oh man, I remember one time I was so broke that I was like, we had like three roommates at the time. And I was like, I'm just going to look through the couch cushions so that I could go buy a hamburger at a fast food joint.
I've been there.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, hey, I could be like, I have no money. And I could just be like, hey, I have no money. Or I could be like, let me look at the couch cushion, see if I can come up with four quarters and go buy, you know, something for a buck. Now it's hard pressed to find something for a dollar now at a fast food place. But I think I've done the yard sale thing. It's so easy. I used to work in electronics for an electronics store. And so people will sell like routers, modems, things like that for really cheap. They're like, hey, it's an old model. I don't need it. I just want it gone. And I can't tell you how many times I bought one for like $5 and sold it for $40 or $50, right? Like there's easy ways to get quick money. You just have to do the research. You have to be patient. You have to, you know, and sometimes it's hard when you're in a financial pinch. Like you're very emotional. You're stressed out. Yeah. You're like, you know, and so it is kind of like that. Okay, let's slow down. Let's breathe. Now let's whiteboard. Like, what are some ideas, things I can do that are legal, right? That I can actually
hopefully
make
so. Money. Yeah. And there's always a way, man. And it's easy to say, oh, well, if you're broke, that's your fault. I mean, but shit happens, dude. Sometimes shit just happens and hits the fan and you got to figure your way out of it. Otherwise, it gets worse and worse. And you see what happens. There's a constant down trail. Drugs gets involved. You've got crime that gets involved, exactly like you just said. And sometimes you hit a moment where you got to figure it out. Otherwise you start to head down that slippery slope, and there's creative ways to go about doing it, which is awesome. Cause in a lot of parts in the world, you don't have that opportunity, you know? So I think regardless of the situation, yes, a lot of empathy if you're in a tough spot, but maybe that's a little too harsh. Yes. Empathy. Cause I know how hard it can be. Yet there is a way out of it if you're creative enough and you ask yourself the right questions, especially with AI now. You can say, this is the situation I'm in. How do I get out of it? What are the questions that I have to ask? What are some ideas that I can do? Tactically speaking, starting today, what are some actually action steps that I can do right now to be able to get out of this? And even just following that, utilizing it to make money. And I love it. What are some AIs that you're using, man? What are you using AI for right now?
Yeah, the only one I really use is ChatGPT, but I think that the challenge with AI is it's only as good as the inputs that it has, right?
Yeah.
And so like the prompts, right? The prompts, I think, make all the difference. I think idea generating is a good one to kind of come up with things that maybe, hey, I didn't think of. Give me 10 more ideas of this, right? I think there's a lot of potential there. One that I'm pretty excited about, but it's not there yet, is Sora, which is going to be the video AI, right? Like if you can have B-roll that looks amazing without having to hire a photographer or a videographer and use it for videos, like that's going to be incredible. So I think there's a lot of potential there. I know there's a lot of people crushing it in AI.
Oh, yeah.
I also know that from a Google standpoint, if people have websites, you got to be very cautious. There's a few, I don't know if you're familiar with nichepursuits.com, but he did a video recently on three different sites that had like millions of visitors and they just lost them overnight to a Google update because they had AI content.
Wow.
Yeah. So you got to be careful. It's not like, people might be like, oh, this is the next best thing. It also could be very dangerous to your business and your brand if you're relying 100% on it, right? So making sure you're human editing it, making sure that it's accurate, will be two ways to make sure that, you know, the AI content can be useful to you and your business.
Yeah. I mean, every positive has a negative, dude. You got to be careful with it. No doubt. Same with anything of power. You have to, what is it? With great power comes great responsibility. And so we've got great power right now and it's only getting more powerful. And so therefore we only need to be more responsible as we leverage it. One of my favorite ways to use ChatGPT, man, is to ask it what questions to ask or what's a good prompt to be able to give you so that I can accomplish X outcome. And so it'll write its own prompt. And then I just say, okay, now I copy and paste that in, bam, answer your own prompt. And what I'll do is I'll actually stack it up. So after it writes the prompt, I'll say, okay, so what are some extra paragraphs I can add to this prompt that would really encourage that result that I'm trying to get? Reiterate the result and it'll give me more paragraphs. By the end of it, you can have a mega prompt with 36 pages and you've got the perfect input to be able to get the exact output that you want. And you can templatize it because next time I don't have to do that. I can just use the template that I saved, which is, it's so cool, man. I love AI. I don't know what I'd do without it now that we have it. I don't know how we lived without it. Like, that was last year, man. This was like a year and 4 months ago.
Yep.
So insane, dude, insane. So what's the question that I'm not asking, but I should be asking that if I were to ask, would be able to help somebody that's in a tough spot?
Yeah, I would say evaluate your thinking patterns, right? I think a lot of our challenges that we face come from the way that we think. Right. And so, I think if we're humble,
by the way, all of the challenges, the perception of it, so you change the perception and then you change the situation because life
absolutely.
Is a perception, you know, so it's interesting. Yeah.
I was listening to this book by Arnold Schwarzenegger called Be Useful. I think that's something his dad used to tell him, was just like, be useful, you know? And one of the things that he said, that failure is not final, right? Like it's if you quit, right? So like failure, every good invention, every good idea has come from some point of failure where they said, hey, this didn't work. Okay, I'm not going to quit. Now I'm going to say, okay, what do I need to do differently in order to get a different outcome so that this failure is not final, right? If you quit, you give up, that's final, but that's on you. That's not because of something that happened to you. It's how do you respond to what happens to you that matters. And so I think it's hard though when you're in that, right? Like I love the fact that you use the empathy quote, right? Or at least the aspect of empathy. It sucks when you're in a position where maybe a lot of things stacked against you that were out of your control. Yeah. That's horrible. That sucks. I feel that. Now it's like, what now? What do I do now from this point forward? How do I react and respond? And so I think that if people can say, well, my thought pattern that got me here was this, where I was around these people and got me in this situation, or I got into this business and that led to this much debt. Okay, let me change the way that I think. What can I do differently moving forward? I think if you could focus there, gosh, the amount of success that could come from that would be amazing.
No kidding. And being self, empathizing with the self too, because, and I love it because you realize the gravity of having to not just say, because a lot of people will be like, oh, you know, change your thinking and you'll get out of it. And there's no empathy there. It sucks to be in these positions. And yes, your perception changes, change the perception. I like that answer, man. Analyze the perceptions that maybe got you there and see if there are ways to tweak it. Tweak your model of reality so that there you can get better results moving forward. And there's always going to be failures, man. You know, I was watching the movie The Founder last night, the McDonald's story with Ray Kroc.
Yeah.
Freaking beautiful story, dude. There are parts in that movie where it's like, wow, like it gives me goosebumps, especially the failures that he had to go through at multiple stages, like the failures in getting the franchising. And then once he got them to agree to allow him to franchise, then there was debt issues because he didn't have the cash flow. And there were solutions to every failure that he was going along the way. And they're clear looking backwards, but it's hard when you're in the thick of it to see where the next step is, the next stepping stone. And I think it's helpful to remind yourself that no matter what problem you're facing, there's always a solution to it. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the problem, or you wouldn't know that you have the problem because there's nothing to compare it to. So that's, you know, there's some depth there. And so I think we leave it at that, man. Thank you so much for coming on. I had a blast with you. Anything else you want to add before we kick this off?
No, this has been awesome. I really appreciate it. And what a great opportunity.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. And if you want to get a free copy of my book, go to kylesbook.com and you can get a copy there. I'll talk with you soon.